It makes us feel good whenever we can get a deal, whenever we can talk down that car salesman or use one of our prized coupons or be able to find that good deal on the clearance rack. It just gives us a sense of pride to know that we got a good deal. In fact, we like to tell stories about good deals that we have or that we've gotten. Maybe during our fellowship time after worship, you can tell one of your stories of how you got a good deal. I'll tell you one of mine. A few years ago, our family wanted to buy a picnic table, and I had heard that at Home Depot that they had an unassembled wooden picnic table for sale for about $100. I thought that might be pretty reasonable. And so I went twice to Home Depot to try to purchase this picnic table, and for whatever reason, it didn't work out. First time, they didn't have enough staff to bring the picnic table from the back to the front. Second time, they were just too slow. I had to go on and do other things. And so the third time, I go to Home Depot to try to purchase this picnic table. And when I get there, I find out that they're out. And so I'm frustrated. I go to the employee and I said, listen, this is my third time to try to get a picnic table. First time you didn't have a staff. Second time you are too slow. And now you're out. Is there anything that can be done about this? And the guy said, well, hang on a second. Let me go talk to my manager. So he went back, talked to his manager, and he said, came back out and said, well, out front here, we have a demo picnic table. It's already assembled and it's been sitting out here all season. Maybe we could just sell you that. So we go out and we look at it. And I said, well, how much is this going to cost? He said, I tell you what, I'll give this to you for $20. I said, $20? Not only was he giving me 80% off the regular price, it was already assembled, which for me is a very high benefit. I said, you got a deal. And for the past several years, we have enjoyed that $20 picnic table on our front porch. It has been great. It's fun to get deals and to find bargains. But sometimes deals can be duds. Bargains can backfire. We use that coupon only to find out that it's already expired and we can't use it. Or we get that garage sale steal only to get back home to find out that the thing we bought is broken down and doesn't work. Or we find a special item at the grocery store on sale, we take it home and we eat it, and we find out that it is no good. That happened to me one time. I was at the grocery store and I saw an item for sale, and I had a coupon for the item that was on sale. And so the sale price plus the coupon meant basically I was getting the item for free. So I just loaded up on that thing. It didn't matter that it was an off-brand of ramen noodle soup with the flavor hot and spicy chicken. I mean, it's free. Let's get it. And then I tried it. I'm not going to buy that ever again, even if they give it to me. Sometimes bargains can backfire. And whenever those moments happen, we realize and we remember that sometimes there's something more important than saving money. King David was the second king of Israel. And if you know of David in the Old Testament, you probably know of many of the good things that David did for the Lord, like when he was able to take down Goliath with a slingshot, five smooth stones with the help of the Lord. Or maybe you know about how David conquered Jerusalem and made that the capital city of the nation of Israel. Or maybe you know about the Psalms and the poems that David wrote in worship to the Lord, many of which that we have in our Old Testament. But David also did some things that he shouldn't have done. And one of those is in 2 Samuel chapter 24, where David issues a census for the people of Israel. He sends his general, Joab, throughout the country to try to determine how many able-bodied fighting men there are. And we read in that chapter that this thing that David did displeased the Lord. It was evil in the Lord's sight. It was a sin. And to David's credit, after the census is over, his conscience gets the best of him. He gets guilt-stricken. He feels guilty over what he's done. And so he starts to pray to God to ask for forgiveness. And this prophet named Gad comes to see him. And Gad tells David that you have three options for your punishment for the sin that you've committed. And you can choose one of these three options. The first option is that you can have 3 years of famine in the land. Second option is that you can have 3 months where your enemies are defeating you in war. The third option is that you can have 3 days of plague. And David chooses option number 3. He chooses that option because he's hoping that just maybe in the midst of this plague, God will have mercy. And David is right. As the plague is starting to come to the city of Jerusalem, God has mercy upon his people. And he says, enough! And the plague stops. And it stops just north of Jerusalem at this farm that's owned by this man named Araunah. And God comes to David and says, David, I want you to go to Araunah's farm, and I want you there to bring an offering to me. I want you to offer a sacrifice to me, and then the plague will stop. So David makes his way to Araunah, and it says in the text that when Araunah saw David, the king, coming, he fell to the ground. And I just imagine that Araunah is, I mean, he's scared. He's nervous. He doesn't know what's going on. I mean, he just knows that there are people dying around him with the plague. It says in 1 Chronicles 20 that he looked up in the sky and saw the angel of the Lord right there. It says his sons were hiding out of fear, and here comes the king to his farm, to his place. So he falls down on the ground. David explains the situation to Araunah. He says, Araunah, I need a piece of your land. I need to make an offering to God. I need to offer a sacrifice to God. And Araunah just wants to please the king. He wants to be of service. And so he says to David, well, there's oxen over here. Just take this oxen and offer it to God. There's wood over here on the chopping pile. Just grab that wood and use it to build the altar. This land right here, you can have the land. Whatever it is you need, please take it, my king. And David responds by saying, no. I insist on paying full price because I'm not going to offer to the Lord my God a burnt offering that cost me nothing. Now the saver in me wants to come to David and say, well, hang on a second, David. You got a great deal here. You can obey the command of the Lord. You can stop the plague and do it all without spending a penny. You can get the oxen for free. You can get the wood for the altar for free. You can have the land for free. I mean, what a bargain, David. What a deal. But David has learned the truth that there's sometimes something more important than just saving money. The issues that David was dealing with in this story were the issues of his power, his sense of control, and his inflated sense of ego. That's why he did this census. It wasn't so that he could just count people and so that he could know the numbers of how many people were in his country. It was about exercising his power. It was about ordering his army. It was about figuring out how much fighting potential he had. And it might have been even about a way to get more taxes from the people once he knows how many people there are. This was about David exercising his power and control. It was about him inflating his ego. It was about him deepening his trust, not in God, but deepening his trust in his own ability, in his own might, in his own wisdom. And if he had taken what Araunah had offered, it would have proven that he had not learned anything through this whole punishment process. He would simply be taking something that wasn't his because he was king and because he has power and because he was in control. And would God have really been pleased with that? Would God really have been pleased if David had come to God with oxen that he did not raise, on an altar that he did not build, on land that he did not own? Would God have been pleased with that? Would God have been pleased if David had come to him with an offering where he didn't even have to get his hands dirty to get it done? Would God have been pleased with David if he had come to God with a sacrifice where he didn't have to do anything but just wave his hand and it was done at his command? Think about it for yourself. Are you pleased when someone gives you a gift that doesn't really cost them anything? I mean, what if I came to you and I said, I've been thinking about you lately, and you just mean a whole lot to me, and you're special to me, and I wanted to give you a token of my appreciation, and I hand you this gift. And I say, by the way, my mom found this at a flea market in Arkansas, got a great deal on it. I mean, just got it for cheap, and Lindsay wrapped it up, and I got Cindy to write the card. From the bottom of my heart, here you go. I mean, would you feel appreciated? I mean, you'd probably be like, thanks, Steve, thought that counts, right? But no. Why? It didn't cost me anything. I didn't buy it. I didn't wrap it. I didn't even write the card. And normally, gifts that don't cost the giver anything, we don't appreciate. Wives typically don't like on Valentine's Day getting leftover flowers from the office. Do I get an amen on that? Children on Christmas morning don't like getting wrapped up presents that are hand-me-downs from their cousins. Now, if they don't know they're hand-me-downs from their cousins, might be a good idea. We don't like typically being invited over to someone's house to eat lunch and have their leftovers. Why? Because it didn't cost them anything. It didn't require them to do very much at all. The gifts that impact us, whether they're large or small gifts, are gifts that cost the giver something. In our church office, we have a little picture. It's a hand-stitched picture of the Southside Church building with our name on it. It was sent as a gift from a lady in prison that she spent her time stitching that. That means something to us because it cost her something. One of my favorite gifts that Lindsay has given me is she took all my t-shirts. I think she was tired of them. She took all my t-shirts from college and from Memphis. And she made them, had someone help her, and made it into a quilt, a blanket that's on our bed. It costs her something to do that. It means something to her. Those are the gifts that mean something to us when they cost the giver. And it's the same way with God. And David knew that. Yeah, sure, he could have gotten a great deal by offering the oxen that was free, on the wood that was free, on the land that was free, but he knew that God wouldn't be pleased with that. So David said, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to offer to God an offering that costs me nothing. The power of cost is that it implies commitment. I learned this when I played high school football. Yes, I did play high school football once upon a time. Called me Clo Dog. I rode the bench, but they still call me that. Anyways, I remember one of our practices, the end of the practice, and we were running the dreaded sprints, and my legs were sore, and my side was hurting, and my head ached, and I just didn't want to be where I was at that moment. And probably most of the players on the team felt the same way. And we ran a couple of our sprints, and then the coach stopped us, and he talked to us for a second. He said, listen, guys, we can get anybody in our school to come out here and run these sprints until it gets a little bit hard and it starts to hurt a little bit and then quit. We can get anybody to do that. But it takes those that are committed to this team and those that are committed to the goal of being a champion. They're going to run these sprints even when it's hard and even when it hurts a little bit, even when it's a little bit difficult. What was he saying? He was calling to all of us as players and he was saying, are you committed? Are you committed to the team? Are you committed to the goal of being a champion? Because if you are committed, you'll pay the cost. You'll pay the price. And David understood that. He understood that if he was going to demonstrate to God that he was committed, you don't come to God with a bargain you found at the clearance rack. You don't come to God with your leftovers and your hand-me-downs and the sales that you found. You come to God with everything you are. And everything you have, and whatever the cost is, you pay it. And whatever is required of you, you give it. And whatever is needed from you, you provide it. Because that's what it means to be an offering before God. That's what it means to be a committed disciple. To say, Lord, I'll pay the cost because I'm committed to serving you. And when we start to think that through, as disciples of Christ, I think it causes us to shift our perspective from focusing on the question of what is it going to cost me to what does God want from me? From what it's going to cost to what is the will of God. We obsess over that first question, don't we? When the repairman comes to our house to fix our broken down appliance, we wade through the diagnosis because we want to ask that question. Okay, how much is it going to cost? Give me the bottom line. When we're with that insurance salesman and he's explaining the benefits of the latest policy, we listen patiently until we find out, okay, what's the premium going to be? Tell me how much is it going to cost? When we go to the car dealer to try to buy a new car, as he's explaining all the features of the latest model, we're thinking in our head, okay, that's going to be a lot of money. How much is it going to cost? We obsess over this question. But what if we shifted that understanding? What if we realized that as a committed disciple of Christ, that's not our biggest value. Our biggest value is what does God want for us? And what if we, when we thought about our life decisions and our daily decisions and how to walk with God, what if we focused on that question instead of the other one? For example, when it came time to figure out where we're going to live and what house we're going to buy and what apartment we're going to live in and what neighborhood we're going to be a part of and what city or town that we're going to put down our roots, what if instead of asking the questions, well, how much is this going to cost, and what's going to be my payment, and what kind of mortgage am I going to have? What if instead we ask the question first, what does God want? Where does God want me to live? Where does God want me to put down roots? What kind of roommate does God want me to have? What kind of neighborhood does God want me to be in? Or when it came time to decide where we're going to go to college, what if instead of asking those financially driven questions like, well, how much is the tuition and what kind of scholarships do they have and what kind of grants can I receive? But instead we ask the question, what does God want? Where does he want me to go to college? Where does he want me to study? What kind of friends does he want me to share? Or what if when church leaders received a new idea about a new ministry, what if instead of asking and obsessing over the question, well, is it in our budget and what have our, how have our contributions been going lately, but instead said, what does God want? Is God calling us to this as a church? Is this is what God wants us to do as a body of Christ? Isn't this what faith is all about? To where economics is not our bottom line, but the will of God is. That's what faith is all about. It's about obedience. It's about trust. It's about coming to God and saying, God, I'm all in for you. And I'm going to follow you. And I'm going to go where you want me to go. And I'll be who you want me to be. And if there's a cost implied in that, I will pay the cost. Because that's not my highest value. My highest value is following your will. But the reality is, the reality is, church, is that most of the time, that is not the kind of faith that we have. Most of the time, the gifts that we give to God, they just don't cost us very much. The money we give, it's money that we're not going to miss. When we donate clothes or other items to help those in need, they're items that we don't want. That's why we're giving them. And when we think about other ways which we can give, whether it's serving or giving our time, most of the time it's time that we don't need. That's why we're willing to give of it, because we don't need it. And when there ever is a time where we're actually asked to give where it's going to cost us, we step back and we say, well, the cost is a little too much here. I don't know if I can do that. But what's so powerful about this story in 2 Samuel 24 is that cost to David was not a hindrance. It was the other way around. He wasn't going to do it unless it cost him something. Because he wanted to show his Lord that he was committed in faith. And whatever the cost was, he was going to pay it. Because he wanted to be an offering before his God. And can we be the same thing? This story in 2 Samuel 24 raises this question for us. Can we have the same kind of sacrificial faith that costs us something? Brenda Dean is from Princeton Seminary, and a few years ago she did an exhaustive study of faith among teenagers in the church. She went all over the United States looking at youth groups and about teenagers and the kind of faith that they were developing in their youth groups and those kinds of things. And then she wrote a book about that, explaining her results. And her results weren't very encouraging, to be honest. She said what she noticed among most teenagers and in most churches is that the faith that they're developing is not a distinctively Christian faith. It's kind of a nebulous faith. It's a nebulous religion that believes there's a God and he wants us to be happy and he wants us to be nice. And these kinds of things, but it's not a faith that talks about following Jesus and being obedient and being disciples and being committed to God's mission in the world. It's not a distinctively Christian faith. It's just this nebulous religious idea. And so someone asked Dean and said, well, what can be done about this? What can parents do to raise their children and to raise their grandchildren to where they have a distinctively Christian faith, where they're disciples of Christ? And this was her answer. After all of her research, this was her answer. She said, if you want to raise your children to have distinctively Christian faith, then what you need to do is you need to make some decisions personally and lead your family to make some decisions based on your faith that cost you in some way. And then explain it to your kids. So for example, make the decision that you're going to give up your vacation and go on a short-term mission trip because of your faith in Jesus, and then explain it to your kids. Explain to them why you're doing that. Or make the decision that you're going to stay home from a school activity or from some activity in the community because you consider it to be inappropriate for disciples of Christ, and then explain that to your kids. Explain to them why you're not participating in that. Or make a decision that you're going to give up a luxury item or some luxury thing that you do, and you're going to take that money based on what you gave up, and you're going to share that with someone who's in need. And then explain that to your children. Explain what you're doing to them. Because she said, once you do that, they'll see that faith, true Christian faith, is real, and it's authentic, and it costs us something. It's a sacrificial faith. It's a faith that's a commitment. And I'll be honest with you, church, in my growing up, the times that I really remember are the times where my faith cost me in some way. I remember times where it was easy to be a Christian and where everything was happy and wonderful. But I remember the times where it cost me. Remember the time where I had to miss sporting events so that I could be with the gatherings of the church. I remember that. I remember the time where our family chose to go on short-term mission trips and I would miss practices with my sports teams because our family felt called to God's mission in the world. I remember the times where I had to stand up for my faith and I felt embarrassed about trying to stand up for what I believed to be was right. I remember those times when my faith cost me. And in my growing up, it was those moments that formed me and that taught me that this is what faith is all about. This is what it means to be a disciple. It's not just coming to church on Sunday when everything's beautiful and sunshiny. It's about costing our lives and giving God everything we have. And saying, God, I'm all for you. And whatever it's going to cost me, I'm going to do. And that's what David was trying to express to his God. I'm not going to give God an offering that costs me nothing because I'm committed to this. I have faith in him. I want to follow him. And are we willing to do the same? And if you think about it, as Chris talked about in his communion meditation, this is what God did for us. When God redeemed us, he didn't do it through a bargain. He didn't do it through finding a sale on the clearance rack. God redeemed us with cost. And that cost was he sent his son for us. He gave a lot for us to be his children. Shouldn't we be willing to give our lives in response to that love? And the first step to giving our lives to God is repenting of our sins and being baptized into Christ. And if you're ready to take that step of baptism, we're going to sing a song of invitation, and you can just walk to the front and we'll help you to do that. But if you've already done that before, and if my sermon just convicted you even in a little bit, that your faith isn't costing you anything, and that it's really not the Christian discipleship faith that we know we're called to, I encourage you to do something about that. We're going to have spiritual leaders surround our auditorium. I know this is a little bit awkward, but I want to encourage you to walk out to one of them and just say, pray for me, that I can have that sacrificial faith that costs me something, because that's what God did for me, and I want to respond by giving him my life. If there's any way that we can help you this morning, please come now as together we stand and sing.